Hello, this is Allison Carter with the Milestones Podcast, formerly known as the Special Needs Podcast. I made the changes this week to the name, and hopefully I didn't lose too many listeners in the process. If you're listening today, then I guess you got the memo, or you're a subscriber on iTunes or Stitcher, and it automatically updated. I will still be discussing issues or topics about special needs and sensory processing, but I'm hoping to pull in a wider audience, including all people or parents with infants and toddlers, so that I might be able to provide them with some information too. If you are a Facebook person, I would appreciate it if you would like me on Facebook. This will help me spread the word about the podcast, and I can make sure you get any future updates to the podcast and keep you in the loop with child development and sensory processing information in general as well. The Facebook page is under My Midwest Therapy. You have probably heard from your child's pediatrician, other moms or dads or parents, your friends or whoever, that your baby needs to have tummy time every day. People say this and think it must be something they're supposed to have their baby do, but probably don't really understand why. Do you know why babies need to have their tummy time? If you don't, you will find out today, and if you think you do, you may even find out something you didn't know before as well. Let me start with the Back to Sleep campaign, which, as of about 5 years ago, became the Safe to Sleep campaign. I'm not starting with this because I want to give my personal opinions about it. I simply want to make the point that infant and child development has changed in recent years, and one thing that has made an impact on that change is the fact that we're putting our babies on their backs to sleep now. Back to Sleep started as a way to try and reduce the amount of SIDS, or sudden infant death syndrome, that has become all too common in infants, especially ones up to 12 months old. SIDS causes babies to die in their sleep without any warning signs. By placing babies on their backs to sleep, the risk of them dying from SIDS goes way down. This is a legitimate concern, and any person who cares for a baby should learn more about this. I will put a link to the Safe to Sleep website in the show notes for today. There's also a very interesting book on the same subject, which is worth checking out as well. I will put a link to that book in the show notes on my website too. Read it for yourself if you want, but whatever you do, just be aware that there are ways to reduce your baby's risk of SIDS, and you should take precautions to keep them safe. The other thing I will say about this in general is that I think because parents are so worried about their baby being on their tummy and dying of SIDS, they also associate danger with their baby being on their tummy at all. This is something they feel like it's just better to be safe than sorry. And it could be one more reason why babies are spending even less time on their tummies. Now, to get back on track, the whole point of that tangent was to show that babies are spending more time on their backs than they used to. It seems like, over time, not only are the babies being placed on their backs for sleeping, but also anytime they're awake and anytime they're not being held by someone. There are so many neat pieces of baby equipment like swings and bouncers and strollers and who knows what else that keep babies entertained when we aren't holding them. Again, they're on their backs in these things, even if they're at an upright angle rather than flat. Let's face it, babies spend a lot of time in their car seats these days, too. One of the things that can happen as a result of being on their back so much is that the back of their head can become flattened. The term for this is called positional plagiocephaly. Of course, now there are all kinds of positional devices for their heads and equipment like helmets that can help with this problem as well. Not every baby with a flat head will be a candidate for a helmet. Sometimes the flat spot will even itself out after time, and once they're spending more time on their tummies or in different positions. As with so many things in life, though, one thing leads to another, and the flat spot on the back of their head is not always directly in the back. A lot of times it is on the back, but maybe off to one side or the other. This just depends on how the baby is usually laying down. It can start off within the first month or two, especially during this time, because they sleep so much at first. And they don't often turn their head side to side that much. This naturally encourages them to stay on one side more than the other and can lead to the flattening. Once this happens, it is even more difficult to turn their head to the opposite side now, because the flat spot is encouraging them to keep turning that same direction. It has become the more comfortable position. One additional issue with this is that it can cause the neck muscles on that side to become shorter or tighter because the head is turned in that direction so much. Again, reinforcing the turning the head that direction because now it is tighter and even more difficult to turn the other way. And this is called torticollis when this happens. Torticollis can also happen before the flattened head, but then cause them to have the flattened head. Babies can be cramped in the womb or held in one position in the womb where their head is held in a position that is turned to one side for a long time before they're born. It can also happen with babies that are born prematurely because their neck muscles may be weaker since they didn't have time to fully develop before they were born. Now, nurses that are in the NICU are typically good about changing their positions as much as possible to try and prevent their heads from getting flat on one side, but it can still happen during these hospital stays, especially if the baby is so medically fragile that they can't be held right away. Now, all of this is to emphasize my point that we now have something called tummy time. This is a phrase that I'm guessing most people, especially parents of young children, are familiar with. You don't have to go back too far to get to a generation that says, "Tummy time? What's that? I put all of my babies on their tummies to sleep. They slept better that way anyway." Now, tummy time is a thing. We started putting babies on their backs for sleeping, so now parents had to be told to put their babies on their tummies for supervised playtime. But why is it so important? That's the ultimate question for today. And I do have to say that it is a loaded question. There are so many reasons why it is important. I will get to those, but first I want to talk about what tummy time looks like or should look like in an ideal world. When an infant is placed on their tummy, the first skill they learn is to lift their head up slightly off the floor or the surface of wherever they're laying when their head is turned to one side. Their head is turned to whichever side the parent turns it to when they lay them on their tummy. We need to start placing babies on their tummies as newborns, unless, of course, their pediatrician has different orders for them based on their specific medical needs or individual needs. The recommendation is supervised times on their tummies during times when they are awake. These are brief amounts of time at first, and as they are awake longer periods of time, they can stay on their tummies longer as well. Typical progression of tummy time could look like this. When they're on their tummy, their head is down, but they're awake and their eyes are open. Then they might lift their head slightly and briefly off the floor. Again, still on their tummy, lifting their head slightly higher off the floor and for several seconds at a time, gradually longer and longer times of holding it up before they rest it back down. They might lift their head and turn their head towards the middle and possibly turn to face the opposite way before resting again. Lifting their head and holding longer and longer while looking to either side and straight ahead. All during these first ones, their hands and arms are probably down towards the sides of their body and eventually they start to creep up to be closer to where they're underneath their chest. Next, they start putting their arms underneath their chest to bear weight through their forearms while holding their head up higher and looking around. And they might start trying to reach for toys directly in front of them while they're on their tummy and possibly starting to roll from their tummy to their back. Then pushing up more on their forearms to lift their chest up off the floor and pushing up on their hands to where they can straighten or extend their elbows and lift their chest and part of their tummy up off the floor. They start scooting backwards by pushing with their hands and they will start to turn circles while staying on their belly, then scooting forward and using their forearms to pull their body forward and probably some help with their legs too. Pushing up on their hands and getting up on their knees and basically into a crawling type position is usually next. Then they start rocking back and forth while they're in this position, and also they start holding that position and being able to lift one hand up to reach for toys. And at first they might lose their balance or kind of lunge forward, and then they start to be able to hold that position while reaching without falling. they start to move one hand and knee forward. And again, kind of lunging at first and then eventually crawling and staying up on their hands and knees the whole time. This is, of course, not always the exact progression, but it can be an example of what often happens in typical development. In babies that have special needs, we often have to help them with specific pieces of these milestones because of weaknesses or any other individual needs that they might have. I'm not sure if it's because of all the hype or because of the actual name tummy time or what it is, but so many people look at this as, okay, now it's time for tummy time, and they almost schedule it for a certain number of times per day to fulfill the requirement. However, it should not be looked at in this way. Of course, there are exceptions for those kids with special needs or medical needs, as always. But even in those cases, as soon as they are able to, they should be something that is incorporated as part of your normal daily routine, not some special workout time necessarily. When the newborn or infant is awake, try and find moments throughout the day you can sit and recline and have them lay in your chest. This will be a great motivator, especially early on, because they will want to try and look at mom and dad. If you're talking to them, then they will want to try and start lifting their head and doing some of those things that I listed earlier. They don't have to be placed flat on the floor, or flat on the bed, or whatever. Give them some help at first by putting them on your chest and reclining so they're at an angle, and they don't have to fight gravity as much right away. As they get stronger, make the angle less and less so they're doing more of the work against gravity. Being on their tummies lays the groundwork for the rest of their lives. I know this sounds extreme, but it is the foundation for our strength and endurance. It starts with head and neck strength and control. Lifting their head, then turning their head side to side, starts the muscle building action. When you strengthen your head and neck, you also strengthen the muscles inside your neck or your throat, which helps with swallowing for eating or at this age drinking milk or formula. For some babies who have special needs, this is a very, very important consideration, especially if they have aspiration due to swallowing issues. Even those who haven't been identified at risk for aspiration but have weaker head and neck muscles in general could benefit from strengthening to reduce the risk of choking or gagging on liquids. In case you don't know, aspiration is where, when you swallow, usually liquids, for a variety of possible reasons, the liquid goes down the wrong way in their throat. Instead of going down to their stomach, some of it goes into their airway and can get into their lungs. This can put them at risk for getting pneumonia, and it's a very serious problem. Besides head and neck strengthening, tummy time starts the development of the natural curves in our spine. We have several different curves in our spine, or our backbone, that support our organs inside our body and help with other gross motor activities throughout life, like standing, sitting, and walking, just to name a few. Without tummy time, these curves may not develop completely or may develop later than they should. As tummy time progresses, we build core muscle strength. Also, rolling helps with that, which is another piece of the foundation necessary to crawl, sit, stand, and walk. Core muscles are the ones that go around our back, our sides, and our tummy. They're very, very important for our stability and our ability to be upright. It is very difficult to learn to sit independently when the core muscles are weak. If these muscles are never fully strengthened and the endurance developed, these kids might struggle in school with sitting up in their seats. They will likely be the kids that slouch over in their seats, or they lean their head on their hands at their desk. Some of them literally fall out of their chairs. They may lack the overall endurance to be able to hold an upright sitting position for the length of time they're expected to at school. This can definitely affect their ability to learn, and it may appear that they're being lazy, or it could look like they have ADHD or a sensory issue. Another important thing about tummy time is weight bearing. We need to bear weight through our hands, wrists, elbows, shoulders, our feet, ankles, knees, and hips in order to make these joints and the muscles around the joints stable. In addition to the sensory piece, which gives all of us input or information about where our body is in space or in our environment through our joints, it also strengthens everything surrounding the joints to make them stable for all of the gross motor skills to come, and the ones that we really need for the rest of our lives. Once tummy time progresses to crawling, first army crawling, then hands and knees crawling, we start to coordinate the right and left sides of our brain. The reciprocal movements of our arms and legs on our right and left sides alternating starts the pattern in our brain of thinking about both sides of the body and coordinating them for not only crawling, but eventually for standing and walking, running and jumping, and alternating feet when walking up and down stairs. However, coordinating the right and left sides of our bodies is also important for things like holding a bottle or a cup for drinking and being able to use two hands to do it, feeding ourselves, especially once we start to use utensils. Think about using a fork and a knife to cut food when we're older. Also for reading and writing and being able to look from left to right on the paper, and also being able to draw or write shapes and letters across the whole page. Scissor skills, where you have to hold the paper with one hand and cut with the scissors in the other hand. I want to specifically mention here that if the child has weak core muscles, it will be extremely difficult for them to be good at doing their fine motor skills because they won't have the stability needed to coordinate their hands without holding on or leaning for extra support. Other skills that we do with two hands or right and left sides of our brain are getting dressed, tying our shoes, maybe removing the lid from the toothpaste tube, typing, and just so many other fine motor and self-help skills that require two hands. These are all some of the things that you could see as a result of not having enough tummy time. I work with families, infants and toddlers who have special needs, and this is a big deal pretty much for all of them. Sometimes I get a referral for a child who is 15 months old and isn't walking yet, or another big thing I hear is when they were a baby, they never crawled. They basically went straight to sitting to walking. They preferred to be sitting or standing than on their tummy or crawling. It used to be pretty common that most kids were walking by around 12 months of age. Now it seems that is less common, and not just in kids with special needs, but any child. We are seeing more kids learning to walk later, more like around 14 or 15 months. This milestone, and actually most of the gross motor milestones in the first year, are being reached later than they used to, in my opinion, but possibly has a lot to do with spending less time on their tummies and more time being held or laying on their backs. So, parents and caregivers of young children, find time to get your babies on their tummies. Start early so they will be used to the feeling and they won't get upset as easily from the unusual or strange position. Also, it is not okay for your baby to skip crawling. Crawling, as you should know now, is very important for the overall motor and brain development of our kids. Please check my website, mymidwesttherapy.com, for links to information from today's show. And if you want to do any shopping on Amazon, you could help support me by using the Amazon links on my website. Those links will take you to Amazon where you can buy whatever your heart desires and will help support the show at the same time. Thank you so much for listening.